It's Friday, May 10, 2013. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Yesterday at my website at albertmoeller.com, I posted an article entitled Sneering at Parents Hiding Behind Science, the Emergency Contraception Controversy. This controversy is one of the most morally revealing of modern times. It tells us a great deal not only about where our culture now is on these issues, but also where it's headed. Just to rewind history a bit, if you go back a month or so, the prevailing policy in the United States is that girls and women 17 and older could be given unrestricted, over-the-counter access to Plan B, the so-called emergency contraceptive. But now, a federal court judge in New York State has ruled that the drug must be given to women and girls of all ages, that is, over-the-counter, to females without any respect to age whatsoever. In response, the Obama administration countered with a policy that lowered the age of availability from 17 to 15. But that's not good enough for abortion rights groups and many feminists who are charging that the issue here is science and that women of all ages, of any age, should be given immediate, over-the-counter, unrestricted access to the morning-after pill. Now, the background to this is very clear. Those same girls, and that's what we're talking about here, as Kathleen Parker in the Washington Post pointed out poignantly, when you're talking about girls of 10 and 11, or for that matter, 15, you're not talking about women, even though those in the media try to talk about this only in terms of a woman's reproductive health. They're girls. And the use of the word girl implies that parents ought to be involved in this situation. And of course they should. But the reason I wrote the article with the title, Sneering at Parents, Hiding Behind Science, is because what we're watching in this particular controversy is that there is an intentional, not even covert, an overt effort to try to sideline and marginalize, if not completely eliminate, parental involvement in the lives of their own teenagers on an issue as important as reproductive health and contraception. But the word science is also in play here because as major forces in the media, including the editorial boards of both the Washington Post and the New York Times have made clear, they're hiding behind science, and the issue is moral. In other words, they're arguing that girls as young as 10 or 11 should be given absolute, unrestricted access to Plan B, and they're saying that to refuse to do so is going against science. Now, what they're really arguing here is that scientific reports that have claimed that girls that young could be competent in taking the drug responsibly and safely— well, they're looking at that and saying that that implies, by science, that they should be given access to it. But, of course, that's primarily a moral decision, not a medical decision. And that's why the issues here of sneering at parents and hiding behind science are of such incredible importance. But as if the prevailing controversy as of the first of this week were not enough, New York City arrives to show us where this is headed. As Newsday and the Associated Press report, as part of a campaign against teen pregnancy, New York City health officials are promoting a smartphone app that will help teenagers locate free clinics that can answer questions about sex, prescribe birth control, test for sexually transmitted diseases, or even provide an abortion. The app is called Teens in New York City. It's known as a protection mobile app. It was quietly made available, according to the Associated Press, in early spring before getting a more public rollout on Wednesday of this week. It was rolled out at a healthcare center in the Bronx. As Newsday reports, quote, it is expressly intended to let teenagers get information about reproductive health services confidentially without having to go through an adult. But it is a statement that is found on the website for the app that makes the agenda transparently clear. Quote, teens in New York City have the right to sexual health services without getting permission from parents, girlfriends, boyfriends, or anyone else. End quote. The real issue here, of course, is parents. And this is an intentional effort on the part of the New York City health authorities to give the teenagers in that city a smartphone app that will allow them to do what their parents would not allow them to do, to get what their parents would not allow them to get, and of course to have access to that which their parents might otherwise block. It is an intentional, straightforward, undisguised effort to say your parents don't matter. You don't have to consult them. They don't have to know anything, and permission is not even on the screen. Quote, without getting permission from parents, end quote, is the very thing that is trumpeted on the website for the app. The sexual revolutionaries, now in the driver's seat of this culture, are doing their very best to imply that premarital sexual activity is not only the right of teenagers, but frankly, the expectation, and that those who believe that there is something wrong with premarital sex or sexually active teenagers are just themselves sexually repressed or holding on to a very outdated sexual ethic? Well, most parents are likely not going along with that theory. But the question is, will they go along with this practice? In other words, will the parents in New York City allow this smartphone app to subvert their own authority with the sponsorship and explicit administration of the health authority of their own city? This is one of those moments in which we're going to quickly find out what parents are made of and what they're going to put up with when it comes to those who are trying to marginalize their own influence over their teenagers. The aftermath of Tuesday's special election in South Carolina continues to reverberate, and the more we consider what it means for former Governor Mark Sanford to be elected to Congress, the more we understand that something significant has changed in this society. Jonah Goldberg, writing at National Review Online, said, quote, "I would rather we lived in a society where adultery had a higher social cost." The very fact that he has to make that statement indicates that adultery in our society right now evidently has a very low social cost, if any. There is a very interesting conversation about this going on now among the nation's commentary class, trying to figure out what this means. Some are pointing to South Carolina as evidence that America is becoming France. As we've discussed on this program, France is a nation that has for a very long time separated the sexual character of its politicians from their political performance, made very clear in the fact that the current president of France, François Hollande, has a live-in in the Élysée Palace who is not his wife. The mother of his children has never been his wife. Former President François Mitterrand had his mistress at his funeral, as well as his family. This is a very different situation than what has been tolerated in America. As a matter of fact, just back in 1988, former United States Senator Gary Hart had to drop out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination when something surfaced, merely a photograph of him on a boat with a woman, not his wife. In other words, we've gone from a situation in which a photograph could sink presidential aspirations to one in which one of the most notorious adulterous affairs in political history cannot preclude Mark Sanford from being elected to Congress by the people of South Carolina. There are other issues at stake here, but one thing is abundantly clear. Even if South Carolina is not becoming France, it is a sign that America is beginning to separate sexual morality from questions of political and public competence and credibility. Now, it is still the fact that Mark Sanford bears the marks and scars of that controversy by the very fact that we're discussing it in this light even today, and the fact that there appears to be something of a moral asterisk after his name, even after he has been elected to represent the people of the 1st Congressional District of South Carolina. This is a matter that has made headline news not only in the United States, but also in at least some nations in Europe, and especially in Great Britain, a nation that is also undergoing a good bit of self-examination on questions of sexual morality and political leadership. But it is interesting to note that it's hard to imagine that this kind of situation would have happened as recently as 10 or 15 years ago in this country. Remember that former President Bill Clinton faced an impeachment trial in the United States Senate, at least partly over a controversy that emerged from his own adulterous affair. But now, the people of South Carolina, at least the voters in the 1st District, have returned Mark Sanford to office. This may not be one of those great cataclysmic cultural shifting events, but it is an indication that something fundamental has changed in this country. By the way, one of the interesting things to note here is, of course, that this election took place in South Carolina, not in Oregon, not in New Jersey, not in California. In other words, in a state that virtually anyone would list as a central part of the American Bible Belt. If nothing else, this indicates that something of a significant moral change is taking place in parts of America where it might have been less expected. From a very different geographic area comes a similar story indicating a tremendous moral and worldview change taking place in our own times. The Associated Press reports that Brazil has decreed yesterday that gay couples have an absolute right for access to in vitro and other assisted reproduction technologies. This is a very interesting story because it's actually far larger than the headline from the Associated Press insinuates. The short story that comes from the Associated Press says this: Brazil is guaranteeing homosexual couples' right to access assisted fertilization. The wording of an earlier decree governing who has the right to such technologies was vague, and some courts in Brazil had blocked gay couples from using in vitro fertilization and other assisted fertilization methods in the past. The report says that the new decree, handed down by the Federal Medical Council, says that such techniques must, not may, but must be permitted for both gay couples and single people. That's what makes the story far more interesting than the headline insinuated. These days, headline writers, of course, are going where the action is. And the action in virtually every culture right now, certainly this reconsidering these issues of sexual morality, is same-sex relationships. So the gay couple issue in the headline makes sense. But of equal moral concern here is the fact that single people, without respect to marriage whatsoever, are also, according to this new decree, to be given equal, that is, equally unlimited access to in vitro fertilization and other advanced reproductive technologies. Brazil has historically been a highly Catholic nation, but it has also been a nation in which a good deal of sexual expressiveness has been central to its public culture. And looking at the nation of Brazil, one interesting thing to note here is that the country does have legal civil unions for both same-sex couples and heterosexuals, but no same-sex marriage. But even without respect to marriage, the medical council there has sent down a decree saying that gay couples and single people have to have equal unrestricted access to in vitro fertilization. The official report, translated into English, says that the medical authority now decrees that these advanced reproductive technologies are to be made available without respect to relationship. That is, as the document says, to homosexual and unmarried persons with, nonetheless, the right for a physician to object on the basis of conscientious objection. In other words, you might have to find a different doctor, but you will have access to these technologies. One of the most ominous and far-reaching developments of the 20th century was the increasing separation of sex and reproduction. And, of course, it first came just as that, the separation of sex and reproduction. It was the issue of contraception that was the great scientific advance that made this separation possible. But most Americans do not remember that when the contraceptive pill was first developed, it was limited by medical policy only for married women. In other words, when the great division between sex and reproduction took place, there was no division between sex and marriage, nor between reproduction and marriage. Marriage was the constant. This new decree handed down in Brazil says that marriage is no longer a constant in any sense. Not only does this policy say that homosexual couples have to have equal right to the assisted reproductive technologies, it also says that single people must have that right as well. That is a very, very significant moral shift. The worldview shift required for this policy to make sense is one that says that marriage is no longer seen to be either a premier social good nor an essential institution to society. Childbearing and child rearing, every society recognizes, is an essential civilizational role and responsibility. It has been, in virtually every civilization across time, limited to and privileged to married couples, or at least children that originated from married couples. But what we have now is a complete severing of sex and reproduction, of sex and marriage, and of reproduction and marriage. And it comes in an official decree handed down in Brazil. Americans listening to this might well say, well, that's Brazil. What does it have to do with us? Well, what it has to do with us is this. We did this without changing the policy. We never had a policy that restricted these advanced reproductive technologies to married heterosexual couples. America has long been, as one European observer noted, the wild, wild west of reproductive technologies. Brazil is just telling us something that was already true about us. Also, at the end of the week, interesting news has come from Colorado, where Colorado lawmakers have passed the first laws in the United States regulating the recreational use, ownership, and sale of marijuana. As Anna Campoy, The Wall Street Journal, reports, Colorado lawmakers passed the first U.S. laws regulating a recreational pot market, setting the stage for marijuana sales to anyone 21 and older starting next January. Two marijuana-related bills were approved Wednesday after lengthy and controversial processes, according to The Wall Street Journal, in which pot business owners, law enforcement agencies, and public safety advocates all had a hand. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is expected to sign them into law by the 7th of June. As the journal notes, Colorado's first steps into a liberalized pot world are being closely watched in states considering similar measures, but many key details still need to be ironed out from how local governments implement the rules to how the federal government will react to the legalization of marijuana, which remains a prohibited substance under federal law, end quote. Now, that's a very softly worded paragraph, because to say it is a prohibited substance is not necessarily to say the full truth, which is to say it is a federal crime to possess it, much less to sell it. nor to use it. But the state of Colorado, along with fellow states such as Washington, are now on a very bold experiment to liberalize marijuana laws. Now, there are some very interesting complications that have already come to fore. As the Wall Street Journal notes, the first complication is, how does Colorado legalize what the federal government says is a federal crime? It's a very interesting way the article was put here, saying that Colorado is waiting to see how the federal government is going to respond to their new set of legislation. When you start to think about it, that's like asking what a child's going to do when he disobeys the parent and then says, are you going to do anything about it? That's what Colorado and Washington are waiting to find out, and the rest of us as well. But there's some very interesting questions here. If you're going to try to legalize marijuana, thus legalizing what had been an illegal substance heretofore in your jurisdiction and still remains illegal virtually everywhere around you, Colorado is going to be surrounded by states in which even owning a tiny bit of marijuana is still going to be a serious crime. Well, you're going to set yourself up for some very interesting questions. First of all, how do you keep this from getting into the hands of kids and teenagers? It is already the case in Colorado, according to reports released within that state, that the first cigarette smoked by most Colorado teenagers is marijuana, not tobacco. Remember that given the medical marijuana available there in Colorado, there are already more marijuana dispensaries in cities such as Denver than there are Starbucks and McDonald's put together. How do you keep it out of the hands of teenagers? Well, the bottom line is, you won't. The laws put into place here may say you have to be 21 to be able to buy it, but the very fact that teenagers find their way to buying tobacco and alcohol indicates that these laws often are not enforced, or perhaps even in some cases, unenforceable, because the second-hand transfer is something that is certainly going to take place routinely. The other interesting thing here is that you're setting up marijuana tourism for your state. As one legislator in Colorado noted, every fraternity in a neighboring state university is going to be heading for Colorado for the weekend. How in the world do you keep them from getting it? Well, how do you keep your state from becoming a tourist mecca for marijuana? Or do you even want to? That's an interesting point that isn't explicitly raised in this article, but certainly is raised by this paragraph. Quote, buyers would pay a 10% state sales tax and a 15% excise tax in addition to local sales taxes. The money would be used to build schools and fund the agency that will regulate marijuana, though the tax rate depends on voter approval in November, end quote. In other words, embedded in this is what you find in so many other sin taxes, an incentive put into place by the legislature of Colorado for Colorado to depend upon income from the sale of marijuana. Thus, the state, as is often the case when it comes to tobacco and gambling and alcohol, is now going to be in the position of needing its citizens to smoke increasing amounts of marijuana to keep those tax dollars rolling in. In a perverse situation where you see this kind of dynamic already in play, you can only imagine where this is going to be headed, with the state of Colorado actually needing to become a marijuana magnet if it's going to make money, even to fund the bureaucracy it's putting in place to administer the legal sale of marijuana. Finally, a story that reminds us that for every single one of us, there are some things we're just never going to understand. A corporate report indicates that at least some parents are complaining that there must be a defect with Mattel's Hot Wheels cars. What's that defect? Little boys try to crash them together. Well, it turns out that the people who are confused about this really aren't just parents, they're moms. Moms asking the question, why is it when I put those two cars down, my son makes them crash into each other? Well, Mom, don't look what dad does with them when you're not around. It's the XY chromosome. And, as we have to admit for ourselves, either way you look at it, there are certain things we're just not going to understand. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For information on the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information on Boyce College, just go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again on Monday for The Briefing.